Hello, welcome to Senate Finance. Today is the 22nd of March, 2013. It is 1:35, and we are taking public testimony on Senate Bill, House Bill 65 and 66, which are the operating budgets. Thank you, Marta. Which are the operating budgets, and we're going to go first to Fairbanks. Present at the table are Senator Fairclough, Senator Olson, Senator Dunleavy, and myself, Senator Kelly. Senator Meyer was online, I know, at the early portion of this in at the Anchorage LIO. He may be there still. Senator Bishop has just joined us. Senator Hoffman is on state business, I believe. So we're going to go now to the Fairbanks LIO and begin public testimony. If you could, everyone, thank you for, first of all, thank you all for coming out to comment on this. It's kind of a fun part of the legislative process when we get to be, like, totally democratic and do what the Founding Fathers expected us, and that is get involved in our government. And through the magic of teleconferencing and those kinds of things, it's a lot easier to do. Anyway, so we're all ears, and we're going to throw it over to the people in the Fairbanks LIO, starting with Colin Olner. I hope I pronounced that right. Go ahead, Mr. Olner, and give us your thoughts.
Good afternoon, Senators. My name is Colin Olner, and I'm a senior accounting student at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. I'm here to advocate on behalf of the UA budget, in particular the accounting initiative. This initiative would introduce an e-learning controllership degree program at UAF. This program will allow students across the state to obtain their education without leaving their communities. Alaska is facing a crucial shortage of trained accountants. The demand for accountants will continue to grow as Alaska's current accountants retire and businesses expand. A recent national study showed that 75% of accountants are going to retire during the next decade, and Alaska is no exception. There is already a shortage of accountants for businesses in Alaska. Local businesses are having difficulties finding trained accountants in Alaska, and many are having to hire accountants from outside of Alaska because there are no local applicants. I am currently working for a medium private company who is looking to hire a controller for their business. They have had to look to hire out of state because there are no accountants in Alaska looking for the controllership job. This initiative targets a job market that is not currently supported by any other program in Alaska. It provides a four-year career track for students rather than the current seven-year CPA track. The focus will be different than the current accounting curriculum, and an emphasis will be directed towards meeting financial, information systems, human resources, and industry-specific knowledge needs of businesses. This program would also require an internship component that would provide mentorship and supervision to develop the necessary experience to transition into the workplace environment. Alaska is continuing to grow in size, and so is demand for trained accountants and controllers. This initiative is vital to the economic growth of the state, and I urge you to include the accounting initiative in the UA 2014 operating budget. I thank you for your time and your consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Olner. Next, we go to Nick Gaska, also in the Fairbanks LIO.
Good afternoon, and thank you for your time. My name is Nick Gask, and I'm the supervising attorney with Alaska Legal Services Corporation in the Fairbanks office. I'm here today to ask that the Health and Human Services Community Matching Block Grant line item be increased by $200,000 so that the eligible essential programs in Fairbanks can be funded. ALSC is one of those programs that is partially funded by this grant. Not only does ALSC provide essential human services to low-income Alaskans most in need of legal services, but our services help the local and state economy. For every $1 invested in ALSC, $5 of economic benefits is generated to ALSC clients, their community, and the state. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gaska. Chris, I'm not sure how to pronounce this. Peak, Pike, Peach? How do you pronounce that, Mr. or Miss?
Good afternoon, Senators. My name is Chris Peich, and I'm a senior accountant student at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. I'm here today to advocate for the addition of the controllership track to the University of Alaska Fairbanks accounting program. Currently, the university is geared towards preparing accounting students to become CPAs, certified public accountants. I plan on becoming a CPA upon graduation, but this is not the same for all students. Public accounting can be exhausting and isn't the right fit for everyone. The controllership track will help address this issue by offering students another option while pursuing an accounting degree. There's a current lack of accountants throughout the nation, including Alaska. Within the next decade, more than half of all current accountants are expected to retire. There's a serious need to address this issue before it gets out of hand. The controllership track is designed to be inviting and flexible for potential students. The accounting curricula provided by this edition will be available to students throughout e-learning, thus creating additional opportunities for students in rural areas of Alaska. I would please ask for you all to consider including the fiscal year operating budget request of $195,000 for this program. This will end up being a benefit for all Alaskans. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Pikes. Eddie Hicks.
Good afternoon, Senators. My name is Eddie Hicks. I'm originally from Denver, Colorado. My family still resides there. I was hoping today to show a need, a current need in Alaska for this controllership program at UAF and statewide. Just last week, my mother emailed me some job sheets from a local Alaska company based out of Anchorage that's currently seeking to hire accountants that are not CPAs and individuals for the controllership program. This ad went out in Denver, Colorado, which was forwarded up here by my mother. I think it shows real-world current need for this program to exist today in Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hicks. Casey Peterson.
Hello, I'm Casey Peterson. I'm a senior at UAF and under the accounting school for UAF. I'm here to advocate for the controllership program. I believe that not only it would be a benefit to the university as a whole, but to Alaska, it would be extremely beneficial because the way Alaska is growing, I believe that the controllership degree or track that can help expand UAF's and the university's accountants as a whole will be able to prepare them for, prepare Alaska for a better future. So, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. Tabor, Raybon.
Good afternoon, Senator Kelly and members of the Senate Finance Committee. I do appreciate the opportunity to testify this afternoon. I'm Tabor Raybaum, today representing Arctic Alliance for People, a network of nearly 40 human service providers in Fairbanks and the interior. We urge you to fully fund the pre-K education program, Best Beginnings, and Parents as Teachers at the governor's recommended funding levels. These programs help children across the state come to school ready and prepared to learn. We are also requesting an increment to the Health and Social Services Human Services Community Matching Block Grant in the amount of $200,000. This amount, when divided amongst the participating communities and matched by the borough, would provide sufficient funding for the eligible programs providing essential human services that have applied for funding to serve the people of the Fairbanks North Star coming fiscal year. We also ask that however you structure the funding, please do not decrease support for Alaska's much-needed behavioral health programs. With our high rates of suicide, domestic violence, and substance abuse, we need a robust behavioral health system to keep our citizens healthy and productive and to reduce the need for far more costly incarceration or institutionalization. I thank you so much for this opportunity to share our concerns, and I appreciate your consideration.
Thanks a lot, Tabor. Also, I just wanted to recognize there were some people at the LIO there that chose not to testify, but have come down to show support for those who were. Elizabeth Downs, Jeff Gregory, and Linda Gregory, as well as... Oh, Linda, you wanted to testify. Go ahead. Oh, no. You know what? I misread that, Linda. Apparently you did not. My apologies. Awkward. Tabor, thank you. We're going to go to Sarah Malenfant.
Good afternoon. I'm here on behalf of all the parents. My name is Sarah Malenfant, and I'm a parent here in Fairbanks who is concerned, as I'm sure other parents are concerned, about the state budget and how it affects our education system. I'm here to remind you that 15 years ago, Tona Knowles adopted the No Child Left Behind Act. This affects both the mental health of our community and our education system. When he adopted this, as any parent knows, that when you reach 15, you can't give the child back. So you keep on, and you tighten your belt, and you trim your fat, and you give up your retirement homes and your new cars, and you stock the fridge, and you give everything to your children, everything. Please keep this in mind as you make your budget. You give everything to your children. They are the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Sarah. Michelle Tarrin. Oh, excuse me, that was Matt Sue. My apologies, that's not until a little bit later. Heather Lambert.
Good morning, good afternoon. My name is Heather Lambert, and I am a parent and volunteer with the school. I'm also a realtor. I do a lot of work with other nonprofits in the communities that have to do with kids. And I'm concerned about the state level of educational funding. I'd urge you to increase the base to student allocation. It'd be easier for districts statewide to go ahead and create plans for the upcoming year. I've learned this recently locally. The Fairbanks School Board is, because of decreases and not knowing what's going on as far as budgets, they're having to prepare their upcoming budget, and that would include cutting 55 teachers. This increases the student-to-teacher ratio across the board. Those changes will be made. My son, the oldest, is in fourth grade, and he's already in a classroom of 29 kids. And I don't know when the last time you were able to go hang out in a classroom for an entire day, but you'd be hurting at the end of that day of 29 kids. I see teachers when I'm in the classrooms. They're becoming more managers than they're becoming teachers. And so they're not able to connect with those students, and I feel that that's one of the really important things as kids go through their year. I am encouraging you to do what's right and to go ahead and use Alaska's public funds to invest in our most valuable asset, and that's our kids and our public education. Thank you.
Thank you. Duncan Marriott.
Hello. Hello. Glad to be here. Thank you for letting us testify. I'm here to advocate for increased education funding for the schools of Alaska. I'd like it if the you guys really need to do is match the rate of inflation of utilities costs in the education funding such that the funding for actual education, teachers teaching students, doesn't get decreased every year. For the past 3 years, the flat funding has decreased the education funding for the teachers for the actual real education every year. Significant cuts have been made. All the low-hanging fruit is gone. And the reality is this community really values education. But more than that, education in itself has value. When you each dollar spent on properly educating a student saves you money down the line. It's impossible to save money for the future by cutting education, because each dollar you cut will cost you more than $1 in the future on money that will be required to be spent on the budget. I've been in school systems as a student, as a parent, as a teacher, and as a volunteer. When the class sizes increase, the teachers must change how they teach. Not only do the students have less access to them, but they can't use the effective one-on-one strategies that they can with a smaller class size. More is different, not just more, just harder. Thank you for your time. Please increase school funding.
Thank you, Duncan. Appreciate your testimony. Margaret Hernandez.
Good afternoon, Senators. My name is Margaret Hernandez. I was born and raised here in Alaska, and I'm a little over a month away from obtaining my bachelor's degree in accounting from the University of Alaska Fairbanks. I have also been interning at a local CPA firm for the last year, and I'm also an officer of the GAP Accounting Club at the UAS. Currently, qualified and experienced accountants are in high demand in this state. It is a great field to steer students towards, but Alaska is potentially facing serious shortages of qualified accountants. This means that local employers will be forced to seek and hire out-of-state accounting students. Implementing this new accounting program will encourage local employers to recruit local graduates. I believe that a controllership degree track would be beneficial for students that are interested in the accounting field but have no plans of obtaining a CPA license. There are several small to medium-sized businesses within Alaska that would be interested in creating this pipeline of potential candidates that are Alaska students that live here and already have a connection to the state in place. Creating a controllership degree would further the reputation of UAF as a source of interested and qualified accountants while retaining current students within the accounting program. There have been students who have either switched to business degrees or dropped out of college altogether because the current program is aimed primarily at getting your CPA degree. For those of us who are continuing on to earn our CPA, the controllership degree would be beneficial for us as well. Students on the CPA track need 27 additional credits in addition to their bachelor's degree to obtain a CPA license. To fulfill this requirement, students may take classes related to the controllership degree to become a well-rounded accountant. I appreciate your time and listening to my testimony. As a student and member of this community, I believe this new accounting program is needed to move forward and provide the state and local businesses the accountants they will be actively seeking in years to come.
Thank you, Margaret. Appreciate your thoughts. Roger Burgraff, how are you doing, Roger?
Hi, fine, thank you. I'm Roger Burgraff. I reside at 830 Sheep Creek Road, Fairbanks, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify today regarding the operating budget. As a, I am concerned that none of the new programs on the UA, University of Alaska Regents budget have not been considered to date. I have been involved in resource development projects and mining in Alaska for most of my life. I strongly believe in the importance of our youngsters being given an opportunity to gain an education which will allow them to be gainfully employed in Alaska in the industries that will help build Alaska. There are several new programs that need to be considered if the university is to fulfill its mission of training its students for Alaskan jobs. The young lady who spoke just before me regarding accounting, I consider that very important. Of course, support for the mining industry. I have concerns about the MAPS training program. They have been defunded by the federal government, and there is a real need that they have funding to continue the programs and be able to comply with federal regulations. Construction trades, engineering, nurses, you know, for rural areas. I feel that those programs are programs that we should develop. It will help us in training people to work in Alaska and be useful citizens. Thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Thanks, Roger.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Fairclough, you had a question?
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to let Roger know that the Senate included the nursing program from Bristol Bay as well as the mining and some other items that were on his list. I just pulled the documents to see. I don't want to say any other programs specifically, but we did add funds that the House had not provided already.
Thanks for that comment, Senator Fairclough. Melissa Kelsey.
Thank you, Senate, Mr. Chairman of the Finance Committee. My name is Melissa Kelsey. I'm a graduate of the 2009 Fairbanks Wellness Corps. I'm here to thank you for the return of the HB 65 funding affecting therapeutic courts and mental health personally, therapeutic court enabled me to choose to break down and begin to restructure faulty belief systems, advocate for myself, and develop tools and effective coping skills, choosing to become accountable for my own choices and collateral consequences. As a result, I chose to co-labor and facilitate a reality check program that speaks to second-time offenders as well as mental health providers in our community. As I continue to support others in therapeutic court and recovery programs, I am a witness to restoration of valuable lives, gifts and talents of fathers, mothers, teachers, and a diverse group of people seizing this chance to rebuild their lives and families rather than fall into further destruction that may have ensued as a result of unneeded, lengthy incarceration, void of therapeutic reconciliation. The effects are far-reaching in our families and communities. Partners for Progress sponsored my trip to the 2012 National Association of Drug Court Professionals Conference, where I personally and collaboratively with other alumni got to encounter and encourage therapeutic court judges, administrators, and care providers, as well as networking with other alumni groups to promote continued, lasting effectiveness in our world. Here, my passion for Veterans Court, which is also a therapeutic court, was ignited, and I have high hopes that our court systems and communities will go above and beyond meeting the needs of our soldiers and their families as they face challenges that may lead to involvement with judicial authorities. I believe it is the heart and passion of restored citizens that will revolutionize how we as a people respond to social, judicial, and mental health issues. Again, thank you and God bless you.
Thank you for that, Melissa. We're going to switch to Valdez quickly here, and bit of Fairbankson, who is in Valdez, and that's Aldine Kilborn. How are you doing, Aldine?
It's fine, thank you. Can you hear me?
Sure can.
All right, my name is Aldine Kilborn. I live at 3217 Riverview Drive, I'm part of House District 9 and Senate District B. Last week, the Senate Finance Subcommittee simply lowered funding for digitizing Alaska education from $5.9 million to $5.1 million, with no allocation specifically to the OWL program and live homework as requested by the governor. Rather, they gave allocation authority to the Commissioner of Education and Early Development. I've indicated in an email to each committee member why I feel OWL and homework help are a cost-effective means of providing help to all Alaskans. This is my public plea that you specifically restore full funding to digitizing Alaska education in the education budget. Thank you.
Thank you, Aldine. Appreciate that. Caitlin Morris.
Good afternoon. My name is Caitlin Cunningham Morse. I am the Executive Director of the North Star Youth Court. I'm here to request an increase to the Health and Social Services Human Services Community Matching Block Grant in the amount of $200,000. North Star Youth Court is one of the many programs in our community that has benefited from this grant in the past, and we provide essential human services for youth in the community. You know, an interesting fact that you may not realize is that for every case that North Star Youth Court and other youth courts like us take, we save the state $10,000 in administrative fees. That means we probably save about $1 million per year for the state of Alaska, just here in Fairbanks, and we're working on a budget of about $300,000. Without the Human Services Community Matching Block Grant, none of the work that we do would be possible. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for those thoughts. We appreciate them. Luke Hopkins. Hello, Mayor Hopkins. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you very much for this opportunity to comment on the operating budget. I have a few items that I wanted to speak to. One is, and how it relates to what we're doing here in the Fairbanks North Star Borough. With UAS, the two program funding requests that are important to both our residents and our economy, I would speak to the request an increase for the salmon research that is in their list. And I would say possibly even more importantly, but on a different nature, the UAV program. We are moving forward here in the community with the UAV test center application, multiple partners here in the community, including the borough and the University of Alaska. So I ask you to consider that. On the education side, I'm proposing a moderate increase in my budget proposal for local contribution to our school system and their operating budget. And that is attempt to sustain existing jobs in our community because, as you know, that our education budget is calling for a number of cuts. And so I ask you to consider an increase, moderate increase to the to that education funding. One more piece, if I may. The increase of for the independent living program that you have put back into the budget, I certainly ask you to support that. Our community, our borough assembly has approved new transit improvements that will aid this type of need in our community. And so to be able to couple local contributions, local efforts with what the state could do to help residents of our community are extremely important. So I thank you for this opportunity and all that you're doing down there. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Hopkins. Appreciate it. I'm going to take a quick at ease, and we'll go to the Matsu LIO. We're back on the record. Just a quick comment. By the way, thank you all of the people in Fairbanks that came out to testify today. We certainly appreciate your comments. We're going to switch to Matsu right now. And a quick note, Senator Dunleavy has a bill in Senate Judiciary, and he had to go testify on that. He'll be back. And his staffer, Sheila Peterson, is here taking notes. It's just a coincidence that as we go to Matsu, he was called away to a judiciary meeting that he really didn't have a choice, and he had to go testify. So with that, we will start. Brenda Luthi, are you there in Matsu?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead.
Good afternoon, and thank you for your time and attention. As you know, my name is Brenda Luthi, and I live in Wasilla. I'm speaking today to support funding for a Director of Alaska Teacher Placement. My husband and I drove to Alaska in 1978, went to Fairbanks, and worked with Alaska Teacher Placement to get started on our teaching careers. We're both still working in education in Alaska today. I taught in Alaska for 28 years, both rural and urban, retired, and have been at the Alaska Statewide Mentor Project as a teacher mentor for the last 5 years. For the past 4 years, I have volunteered at the Alaska Job Fair put on by Alaska Teacher Placement. Since the Alaska Statewide Mentor Project shares office space with Alaska Teacher Placement in Fairbanks, I am exposed to some of the many facets of ATP. I have come to see how critical ATP is to recruiting quality teachers to Alaska. The Alaska Job Fair, of which I'm most familiar, is an incredible couple of days where hundreds of candidates seeking teaching positions in Alaska meet with school districts from all over the state, and our goal is to help candidates and school districts match up. Having a director for Alaska Teacher Placement is crucial. ATP needs a person to be responsible for the entire operation, someone to communicate with school districts throughout the year, someone to manage the budget, someone to keep a handle on the technology piece of applications, someone to answer questions from candidates all around the country, someone to put on and attend these job fairs, both in Alaska and outside, and someone to attract the best teachers possible for the students of Alaska. Thank you again for your consideration in funding a director for Alaska Teacher Placement. We feel that every student in Alaska deserves a quality teacher. Thank you.
Thank you, Brenda. Appreciate that. Michelle Tarrant?
Yes, hello. My name is Michelle. I am a mom of a preschooler hoping to participate in the public preschool here in Matsu next year, funded by the state pre-K. I'm also a speech-language pathologist for the Matsu School District. I wanted to share this with you. My mom and I both have experience working in high-quality early education centers.
when my mom visited and volunteered at my daughter's private preschool this winter. She taught the class a new verse to the popular song, If You're Happy and You Know It. The new verse was, if you're sad and you know it, say boo-hoo. What we discovered the next time we volunteered was that the teacher had unintentionally but absolutely distorted the intent of the verse. After singing, if you're sad and you know it, she taught her class to stay silent, to not say boo-hoo. We were horrified that this teacher, though her intent may have been good, was not only passing up an opportunity to teach that it was okay to be sad sometimes, but in effect taught the class how they should feel. Private preschools may strive to offer happy surroundings, but a public preschool staffed with certified teachers who follow outcome-driven curriculum will better prepare our children for success in school and in life. What appeals to me most about my daughter attending a school that is run by early childhood educators is the social-emotional instruction she will receive. We are learning more and more that skills related to responding to and coping with social situations are crucial for success in society, as much as, if not more, than reading and writing skills. Cutting the state pre-K budget will jeopardize Alaskan children and Alaska's future. Families alone cannot promote an understanding of social consequences or how to get along with peers. No matter what their income level, families need to give their children opportunities to learn social-emotional skills applied in a group setting. Public preschool will translate to success in the classroom and beyond. Thank you.
Thank you, Michelle. Nathan Dunn.
Yes, my name is Nathan Dunn, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you. I'm speaking on behalf of the Alaska Addiction Rehabilitation Services, also known as Nugent's Ranch. I'm concerned about the $8.3 million reduction from the behavioral health budget, and I'd like to request and encourage you to fully fund without reduction the behavioral health budget. I'm speaking as a former client of the ranch. I successfully completed their program. I have been able to enter society as a productive member of the community, and I am very, very thankful to the state and to Nugent's Ranch for what they have offered and given me. I currently am very actively involved in community activities at the ranch, and I'm actively involved with the clients there and helping them as any way I can. That's on a weekly basis, and I see what the ranch and the staff there do for these people on a daily and weekly basis. It's so important that we fund our behavioral health budgets to the extent that to as much as we can, because the communities suffer if we don't, and these people really need that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dunn. Lydia Lester.
Hello, thank you. I'm Lydia Lester, representing the Infant Learning Program in the state and specifically at the Mat-Su Valley, and would like to thank the House and Senate for approving the ILP budget for upcoming years into the future, hopefully, to help us work on behalf of our community with children to support their needs now, so that we won't have to pick up pieces and modify behavior with adults into the future. I just came from a home visit and saw a two-year-old boy whose mom expressed confidence that because of involvement with the early intervention program, her son will adapt in spite of his delays and disabilities, and in part because of early help and her hands-on involvement as a parent. And I think that just exemplifies what we do in, taking people where they're at and supporting them and being with them and building on their strengths and creating the future that way. So I really appreciate what you've done, and also would like to mention support for kid programs in general, I think they're the most cost-effective way to deal with society's issues. Thank you.
Thank you. Kelly McBride.
Hello. I'm here from the Early Childhood Partnership of MATSU to advocate for funding for early childhood opportunities, including Best Beginnings, Parents as Teachers, and state pre-K funding. Specifically, our state pre-K program came about because of the relationships that were established through our Best Beginnings partnership. Our pre-K program is called Widening the Net. The school district worked with Head Start to provide preschool for 80 children in the MATSU Valley who are either on the waiting list or above the income requirements to attend Head Start. We currently have preschools at Trapper Creek Elementary, Shaw Elementary, Palmer High, and Wasilla High that are taught by highly qualified teachers. These students will be prepared this fall to be successful in kindergarten socially and academically, and more likely to graduate from high school in the class of 2025. They're more likely to be productive Alaskans contributing to our economy than to require costly social services. However, about half of the children in the Valley don't have this opportunity, many because their parents can't afford a private preschool or they work and don't have transportation to get them to and from daycare. While President Obama has talked about universal preschool, where every four-year-old child has the option to attend, the federal government is unlikely to produce the funding, and I believe the state and local agencies are better equipped to understand the needs of their communities. We need to have partnerships with public and private sectors to have a continuum of options available for families. I encourage you to consider investing in early childhood and restoring or expanding the funding to the state pre-K program. Thank you for your time.
Kelly, thank you for your testimony. Senator Kelly had to step away from the table. This is Senator Fairclough, and along with me is Senator Bishop. We'll continue to take testimony. The next on the sign-in sheet is Polly Smith from MATSU. Polly, welcome.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today, and I appreciate the work you're doing for all of us in Alaska. I am calling or talking to you to ask you to support education overall from birth through the university system. I appreciate the partnerships that we are building. I'm asking you to increase funding and restore the Best Beginnings money that the governor has in his budget. I'm asking you to increase Parents as Teachers funding. Tomorrow morning, I am volunteering to be a trainer for parents in the Ready Kindergarten program, supported by a Best Beginnings Success by Six partnership. I learned a very interesting fact today when I was doing my preparation. 80% of the children who start kindergarten with less than 4,000 words never catch up, and 6% move on to college. Alaska needs early childhood programs to support parents and caregivers in developing opportunities for all of our children. I end with an opposition to using state funds and public money for supporting private schools. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Polly. Next on our list is Kevin Munson in MATSU. Kevin, are you with us?
I am. Thank you for this opportunity to testify before the committee. My name is Kevin Munson. I am the Chief Executive Officer for MATSU Health Services. We are the behavioral health provider for the greater Palmer-Wasilla area. And I wanted to express my appreciation and thanks for the subcommittee's work as well as for the committee's adoption of a CS that maintains the governor's recommended funding for behavioral health services. As the House received extensive testimony, these are critical services that provide valuable help to individuals and families in our communities that help them to be successful both educationally, vocationally, as well as in life. So I just wanted to take this time and opportunity to thank the committee and encourage the committee as it struggles with its very real needs to balance the budget, that it keep in mind that these are, in fact, valuable services, and we do appreciate your commitment to them.
Thank you, Kevin, for those comments. Next in MATSU, Adam. Adam, could you state your name for the record for me?
Adam Naranjo.
Thank you very much. Welcome.
Thank you for the opportunity to testify today on behalf of a parent who is unable to be present regarding the value of the services provided to her child by the Complex Behavioral Collaborative. I'm a support staff supervisor with Matsu Services for Children and Adults, and I'm a resident of Palmer, Alaska. I would like to enter the following letter into the record written by Allison, a mother whose child receives services from the Complex Behavioral Collaborative.
Adam, could you pause for just a moment? We're trying to get the name exactly of who you're reading written testimony for. Could you just take a moment to slowly spell the name, at least the last name, so that we can have it accurately in our records?
Yes. The last name is Verbose, V-E-R-B-O-S-E.
And the first name, was it Alice?
Allison. I-L-L-I-S-O-N. I'm sorry, A-L-L-I-S-O-N.
Thank you so much. We have it. Please continue.
I'm the mother of a 25-year-old son who experiences autism and who has recently received support from the Complex Behavioral Collaborative. The supports provided by the Complex Behavioral Collaborative have helped my son decrease aggressive behaviors, remain stable in his placement, and function successfully in his community. Most importantly, the Complex Behavioral Collaborative has enabled my son to remain in Alaska receiving services in his own community rather than being forced to seek services outside of the state. The ongoing support has proven immensely helpful. We have seen excellent progress and believe that continued support is necessary in order to ensure that my son continue to live a full life within his community. Again, thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Adam, and thank you for bringing Allison's testimony to us. With that, I'd just like to acknowledge that we've reached the end of the list in MATSU. Is there anyone else at the MATSU LIO wishing to testify before the committee?
There is no one else. Thank you.
Thank you so much. We'll move back to Fairbanks. Linda Gregory, would you like to testify? Linda, are you there?
Oh, I'm here. Thank you. I finally got my nerve to speak. You guys called me earlier, and I didn't. Anyhow, I want to keep this short and sweet. I am a parent here in the Fairbanks area of two students. I'm also a lifelong Alaskan and a product of Alaska's public school system. I am very involved on volunteering on many levels within the school, within the community, with children of all ages for all different things. I just wanted to ask that when looking at the budget this year, please keep in mind that a low teacher-student ratio is imperative to the classroom learning environment. It makes the difference in a teacher actually teaching versus essentially maintaining crowd control. I understand that in the time of needing to make budget cuts across many levels in the state budget, that there's many, many people in organizations looking for money and looking to not have budgets cut. But I would like to ask to please keep in mind that children truly are our most valuable resource, and that if you are able to increase funding, fully fund the education budgets in Fairbanks, it would be most appreciated. Thank you very much for your time.
Linda, thank you for joining us. We appreciate those comments, and I believe everyone in this legislature cherishes our children and knows that education is a key to their future success. So thank you for caring. Still in Fairbanks, Astrid Larson. Astrid, are you there?
First, I wanted to. Oh, my name's Ashley Thurston. I wanted to echo what Linda just said, and I wanted to request that you fully fund the Fairbanks schools. I have two children in public schools, and losing teachers is like losing generals on the front line. In all of my children's classes, there are always children who are foster kids. They're kids who come from situations that are sometimes just neglectful, sometimes, you know, parents are on the verge of incompetent, and the consistency that teachers bring those children is remarkable. And I've seen children personally change. Kids who have entered the classrooms as first graders and unable to stand in a line, unable to tie their shoes, unable to wash their hands. And really by the end of the year, teachers have taught them many, many life skills. And it goes beyond the idea of test scores when you're teaching children how to be members of society. And I think that to lose teachers in our community, that those are the kids who are affected the most, because a larger class, they're not going to receive what they need. These are the kids that have the low test scores. Like, you can, and it's just not going to get any better with fewer teachers or with more crowded classrooms. And so my request is just that you take into consideration that money spent when children are young, you know, that is ideally money that you don't have to spend later on other programs or on prisons. And I actually have a couple of things. I also wanted to ask you guys to please increase the Health and Human Services Community Matching Block Grant in the amount of $200,000, and ask you to please provide sufficient funding for essential programs in our borough. One of those essential programs is the North Star Youth Court, and I have a 13-year-old daughter who is an attorney with the North Star Youth Court, and I can tell you that for a teenager, they are so self-absorbed, and her exposure to other children has really made her a more empathetic member of our society. Like, you know, you have kids that walk around, and so I think it benefits the kids who are in trouble to be involved with youth court, to be judged by their peers and to have appropriate punishments doled out to them. But it also really benefits the kids who are actively working within the youth court, because they learn, you know, about the other people that are in their local world. And then I had one more request, which is to support the budget increment for state parks. And I don't have really anything in front of me. I just had a flyer in my purse. But state parks up in the northern region is something that are used by many, many citizens. And it would be great if they could have the funding that they need to. Thank you.
Astrid, thank you for that testimony. Is there anyone else in the Fairbanks LIO wishing to testify before the Senate Finance Committee on the operating budget or the mental health operating budget?
No, we've heard from everybody.
Thank you so much. With that, we'll take a brief at ease until others sign on. Next, coming before the committee will be the Anchorage LIO at 2:30, but again, we'll hold and see if there are any others from Fairbanks or Mat-Su that might join us in the next few minutes. Thank you. With that, we're at ease. It's 2:30 and we're back on the record. Just want to check and make sure that no one else had came in late to the Fairbanks or Mat-Su LIO. Is there anyone in those two locations? Thank you very much. With me continuing this afternoon, Senator Click Bishop and myself, Senator Anna Fairclough. We're moving to the Anchorage LIO to continue hearings on HB 65, the operating budget, loans and funds, as well as HB 66, appropriations for the mental health budget. With that, we understand in the Anchorage LIO that we do have one person with a critical time constraint. If Jim Wanamaker would come to the microphone, Jim will take your testimony and then start with the first person who signed in. Jim, are you with us?
Senator Fairclough?
Yes, sir.
Senator Fairclough, this is Senator Meyer. Just want to let you know I'm here in the Anchorage LIO as well.
Thank you, Senator Meyer. We knew that you were there before. I apologize for not recognizing you. This is a one-way camera going on our side, so I don't see those that are sitting with you. Is Mr. Wanamaker there, Senator Meyer?
Yes, Jim Wanamaker here. I'm a retired Alaska District Court judge. I was involved in the founding of the Wellness Court and other therapeutic courts founded by Judge Rhodes. And I just wanted to thank the Finance Committee for Senate Finance Committee for restoring the appropriation for the therapeutic courts. I hope you'll fight strongly for it in the Conference Committee with the House. And I would underline that this is the pathway of saving money. It costs around $10,000 to put a person through the Wellness Court. It saves. Say on a fourth DUI is mandatory 2 years in jail, 18 months served, and that costs $70,000. So it's a tremendous money saver. It should be expanded, not contracted, and I hope you'll give your enthusiastic support to keeping this in the budget. Any questions?
Mr. Wanamaker, thank you for your service to the state as well as the city. We appreciate that. Next at the Anchorage LIO, Terry Lynn Drager. Terry, if I've mispronounced your name, please state it correctly for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hello, my name is Terry Lynn Drager. I'm a junior at UAA, majoring in biology. I love the University of Alaska Anchorage and wish to see it succeed. I'm here to thank you and urge you to provide the rest of the funding for UAA UAF engineering buildings in the UA capital budget. These buildings are very much needed to stay accredited and to increase space that is very needed, especially in lab. We're going to be seeing an influx in engineer majors from the Anchorage schools, from the engineering academies, and these labs are going to be even more overflowed, and we'll have to be having wait lists, and that's no good because Alaska needs engineers. So we're breaking ground this summer with the funding that you guys provided last session, and we don't want to stop construction, so please fund the engineering buildings. Thank you.
Terry, thank you for your testimony. There will be another opportunity to testify in the capital budget, so you might want to follow online. We have the operating budget, and we certainly are taking those notes down on your testimony. But there will be another opportunity on the capital budget, and I hope that you'll be pleased. With that, Betty Walters. Betty, are you in the Anchorage LIO? I see you're from the community of Kodiak, but we welcome your testimony today.
I am. Thank you for having me, Senators, both in Juneau and here in Anchorage. My name is Betty Walters, as was stated, and I am testifying from the LIO in Anchorage, although I do live in District R on Kodiak Island. I'm here today to support the University of Alaska budget proposal. Specifically, I would like to speak to the Alaska Teacher Placement Director position that is included. I cannot hold a candle to what Brenda Luthy said as she testified from MATSU, though. Senator Meyer is looking at my notes and seeing all the scribbles within my notes because, in fact, I have tried not to repeat many of the things that Brenda has said. I'm a volunteer for Alaska Teacher Placement. My point is that is why I am here. We currently operate without a program director. I'm a 30-year retired educator in Alaska and served as the superintendent of Kodiak Island for 11 years. Since that time, for the past 6 years, I've been an Alaska statewide teacher mentor. For 22 years, I've been at the job fair, at the Captain Cook, on the floor, hoping to get those teachers and administrators who we'd like to see in our classrooms and in our schools in urban, rural, and remote locations. I have knowledge of the need for the Alaska teacher placement. The position, however, requires a full-time ATP director. With the leadership skills, budget and finance background, knowledge of recruitment, program management interest, commitment to the state of Alaska. Additionally, that person needs the willpower and the personality to deal with the diverse nature of the position and the program. The person must have the ability to build partnerships with school districts, with universities, and with state agencies that support children in schools, specifically CESA and CERC. ATP is the information center for teacher applicants new to the profession, those with experience elsewhere in the state, and those also from outside. Often the first to encourage, to guide, and to support the applicant, whether it be a teacher or an administrator, is the ATP director. Through visits to campuses, job fairs, emails, Skypes, phone calls, monitoring the questions and answers on the ATP forum, the director is the voice of employment in education across Alaska. I have a job. I have a job that I really enjoy, so I am only a volunteer, but I know what the job takes. I leave you with the difficult decisions that you must make. In the best interest of our young people of the state, I hope that you have the insight into the ATP director position. I urge you to consider that position as it meets the needs that exist. I will continue to support a new hire as he or she transitions to ATP. Thank you very much.
Betty, thank you for your testimony. Several people have spoken to this position, so I just want, if there are others, that's a $100,000 increment for statewide, in statewide services. So it's taken me a while to find it in the university's book, but I do have it located now. Thank you for your testimony. Next in Anchorage, Faith Myers. Welcome, Faith.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Faith Myers. In the 1990s, my vocation was in early childhood education, in which I had a degree. But over the last decade, my avocation has been in volunteering as a mental health advocate. I would like to speak to two issues. First, funding to diversionary mental health courts should not be cut. The second issue, we are asking that money be put into the state budget to improve the psychiatric patient grievance procedure law, AS 4730-847. Recognition of disabled psychiatric patients should require the state to give all disabled psychiatric patients a special grievance procedure. As of today, Alaska may be one of the very few states that have not set up statewide uniform grievance procedure rules outlining due process and appeal processes for disabled mentally ill individuals. Most hospitals in Alaska treating disabled psychiatric patients use the Joint Commission for the Accreditation of Hospital Organizations grievance rules as their foundation. 7 days to notify a disabled person that the hospital received their complaint, and then an additional 7 days before the hospital sends a resolution. No appeal process required outside of the hospital. Not good enough to prevent tragedy. In closing, we are asking the Senate Finance Committee to budget money to improve the grievance procedure law for disabled psychiatric patients, AS 4730-847. There are several work drafts available. Thank you.
Faith, thank you for that testimony. Dorrance Collins. Dorrance?
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Dorrance Collins. 20 years ago as a state, we made a promise in law, and that promise was that disabled psychiatric patients and, by extension, guardians could bring their grievance to an impartial body. It has never happened. Alaska has never set up the ground rules for an impartial body and never provided the funding. Today, when a psychiatric patient or guardian files a grievance, it is the employees of the institutions doing the investigation and supplying the resolution. Today, there is no promised impartial body to hear grievances. Alaska may be the only state in the U.S. that does not have a formal appeal process for disabled psychiatric patients' complaints past the walls of the institutions. In closing, Alaska should fulfill the promise made 20 years ago, and we are asking that money be put in the budget to revise the psychiatric patient grievance procedure law for all psychiatric patients. There are several work drafts available. The work drafts outline an impartial body to hear grievances and an appeal process past the walls of the institution. As stated, most states have done this 5 to 10 years ago. Thank you for your consideration.
Thorns, thank you for your testimony. With that, we have do have one person from Anchorage that I'm going to ask to join us at the table, and then I'll be right back to him. Carl, if you could come to the table, I'll accept your testimony. I'll take one more in Anchorage while you come forward. Stefan Tremble. Stefan, are you with us?
Madam Chair, thank you.
Welcome.
Madam Chair and Honorable Senate Finance Committee members, I come to you today as the chairman of the UAA Geological Sciences Advisory Board, and I testify today expressing strong support for the inclusion of the Consolidated Alaska Mining Initiative line items in the university budget. As you know, mining is a critical resource development industry for our state. In order for our economy to grow, we must invest in our future. There is no better place to invest than the crucible of homegrown higher education, our university. We need to educate and empower Alaskans to stay in Alaska. I applaud your efforts for the reinstatement of the Mining Regulatory Training and Certification Program, a $200,000 line item, and the director position for mine training at UAS, a $90,000 line item, two portions of the four total CAMI appropriation line items in the university budget. But we cannot succeed with a regionally exclusive approach. The Alaska Minerals Commission for the previous 2 years has identified the formation and funding of CAMI programs as one of its top priorities and recommendations. Our state has an uncertain future, and the time to invest is now. As a commissioner of the Alaska Minerals Commission, Department Advisory Board Chair, and College Advisory Board Co-Chair, mine owner, and geologist, I see the benefits we all stand to gain through this aligned investment. I ask that you would consider the reinstatement of all four remaining, or four total programs, that comprise the Consolidated Alaska Mining Initiative. The remaining needed items for the total CAMI appropriation are $100,000 for a mineral and environmental resource program at UAA and $100,000 for a mining research and development initiative at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. The total amount of these combined four appropriations is $490,000. Industry has requested this unprecedented and consolidated dialogue with the university. Please consider supporting this groundbreaking initiative in its entirety for the future of Alaska. Thank you for the opportunity to testify here today, and thank you for your service to Alaska.
Thank you for joining us, Stefan. With that, we'll come back to Juneau for a few moments and hear from Carl Rose. If you could identify yourself for the record, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. For the record, I'm Carl Rose, Executive Director of the Association of Alaska School Boards. I'm testifying on behalf of my Board of Directors, who will be meeting here tomorrow. Thank you for the opportunity. I want to shed some light on the challenge that we face in K-12 education. As you know, we're a mandated responsibility to state. The courts have determined that the legislature is ultimately responsible for children and learning. The challenge we face is that with the funding that we've received over the last 4 years, It has affected our operations, our program, and our instructional responsibilities as school districts. Operations, of course, as you know, is everything from thumbtacks to thumb drives. The idea behind program is the programs that we will be able to offer on an ongoing basis or not. And then lastly, in instruction, this is an area where a large part of our operating expense is in salary and benefits, and this is where the PTR will come up. So operations, programs, instruction, and then here's the part of our challenge. While we are inundated by that, the governor has put a goal of 90% graduation rate, and I appreciate that. We are going to be dealing with state standards that have been adopted that will require curriculum development. We are going to be assessing those standards in 2 years. We are adopting a new teacher evaluation system that will require professional development and implementation. At the end of this, we are entertaining the thought of grading our school system. Merely, I just want to put this before you. My membership has a huge responsibility and challenge. We accept it. We're asking for a hand. So we're asking for some help, Senators, and I think that you've heard that testimony. The second point I want to bring up is about the digital consortium. What this represents is a structure and methodology that will bring digital technology to all 129,000 students and 8,300 teachers. I've offered you that information, but I do want to share with you that what this represents is a systemic approach to changing our classrooms, as opposed to 53 random attempts at technology across the state that will never result in a statewide initiative because we don't have the directive. And lastly, the point I'd like to make is that I personally serve on the board of directors of Best Beginnings. I've been a board member for 3 years. I saw the wisdom in it then. I see the wisdom in it now. And so I would ask you to consider to take a look at early childhood development as a critical portion of the starting of our kids moving forward. I have a lot to say, not a lot of time to say it, but I do want to share with you that our membership is actively in pursuit of meeting the challenges that we face for our kids. We simply ask for a hand from the legislature. Thank you very much.
Mr. Rose, thank you for testifying. I don't think it's out of order to say that Senator Meyer, Senator Kelly, and the entire Finance Committee, as well as the Majority Caucus, is looking at education and trying to see how we can meet some of those needs that have been expressed to us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Back to the Anchorage LIO, Donna White. Donna, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you, Chairman Meyer, members of the committee. Thank you for allowing me to speak with you today. I am Donna White, and I'm here today to encourage you to support the $120,000 increment for Victims for Justice. I am a former director of the Division of Probation and Parole with the Department of Corrections, and I learned about Victims for Justice when I worked for DOC. It may not be immediately apparent how a corrections employee knows about the victims of crime, but like others in the criminal justice and corrections arena, we do see how violent crime can have a terrible impact on innocent victims. However, as much as DOC may empathize with victims, they are seldom in a position to do much to help them directly. And for this reason, I came to truly value the work of Victims for Justice. Victims for Justice is a 501c3 nonprofit agency that has been serving the victims of violent crime in Alaska for 27 years. They provide a wide variety of services to assist primary and secondary victims of crime to stabilize their lives after victimization. Covering the greater Anchorage area and the Matsu Valley, their service area includes more than 55% of the state's population. Victims for Justice is the only organization in Alaska offering services across the spectrum of violent crime. More than half of all reported violent crime and crime victims fall within the categories of assault, robbery, arson, human trafficking, elder abuse, drunk driving, kidnapping, arson, and the surviving family members of homicide victims. These are the people they serve, helping between 200 and 300 persons each year, and this population meets the Victims of Crime Act definition of underserved. There are a lot of ways Victims for Justice serves the state as well as its clients.
You may be familiar with the Vine Network, a way for victims to be notified when their assailant is requesting bail, moved, or released. DOC administers the Vine Network, but the advocates at Victims for Justice help dozens of victims sign up for this valuable service every year. They also help victims complete the forms from the Violent Crimes Compensation Board, and they help the staff and board members at VCCB to understand the details of the victim's situation. In advocating for victims of violent crime, Victims for Justice also provides important assistance to the criminal justice system. Police and troopers say that the support and advocacy VFJ offers to victims help to stabilize them and makes them more able to assist with investigations. Prosecutors know that VFJ support helps victims to overcome the natural reticence that arises from an unfamiliar and fearful experience and lets them be more able witnesses. In this way, the work of Victims for Justice helps to solve crime, obtain convictions, and remove criminals from our communities. This helps us all. The requested increment of $120,000 represents about 1% of the funding to victims' assistance programs. Because VFJ is the only organization established to assist the victims of underserved crime, I hope you can support this funding. Thank you.
Donna, thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Next in the queue, Julie, is it Rabeau or Rabeau?
Correct, it's Rabeau.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the opportunity to speak to the committee. My name is Julie Rabeau. I am a registered nurse of 29 years, a mother of two, and I am speaking today as a private citizen. I first of all thank you for the reinstatement, and I am asking for the continuation of the Trauma Care Fund in the state budget for fiscal year 14. Each year, trauma accounts for 42 million emergency department visits and 2 million hospital admissions across our country. In life years lost, trauma accounts for 30% of all life years lost in the U.S. Cancer, 16%. Heart disease, 12%. HIV, 2%. Because trauma is a disease that affects all ages, all people, all races, all states and regions, the impact on lives lost is equal to the lives lost from cancer, heart disease, and HIV combined. The economic burden is about $406 billion a year, including both health care costs and lost productivity. Unintentional injury is the leading cause of death for those aged 1 to 44 in Alaska. Alaska annually reports thousands of trauma admissions and spends hundreds of millions of dollars in hospital costs alone. We know that trauma patients have up to a 35% lower risk of death and disability when taken to a designated trauma center versus a non-designated trauma center. We know that the Alaska trauma system represents a continuum of integrated specialized care that includes trauma centers designated from the highest level of care, which is Alaska Native Medical Center, the only Level 2 trauma center in Alaska, to the 11 Level 4 trauma centers, which are combined throughout rural Alaska. The Level 2 trauma center in Alaska is the only hospital in the state with a dedicated trauma surgeon, a backup trauma surgeon, in the hospital 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, a highly specialized trained trauma team, a trauma anesthesiologist, trauma operating room, and OR staff, and what is equally important, a dedicated backup trauma surgeon and trauma team ready to go. If trauma patients only came in one at a time, my life as a trauma nurse would be easy. But that's not the reality. We see it daily in the news and try to pretend that it will never happen here in the United States, or here in Alaska, or to our own children and family. I want that trauma team there ready to go if someone I know or love shows up in an emergency department with a life-threatening injury. I've seen it daily on a daily basis for 29 years, and I know that their best chance of survival, and usually their only chance of survival, is showing up at a designated trauma center with competent staff and a ready system. I don't want what's left as a system of luck, which we see at these non-designated trauma centers. Hospital trauma systems ensure that the injured patients go to the right care at the right place at the right time. Trauma care funding supports personnel, equipment, education, prevention, and trauma data systems. This small $2 million investment we are asking you to continue to support gives these hospitals those resources to save lives. The death rate from unintentional injury is more than 50% higher in rural areas than in urban areas. The need for additional trauma centers in Alaska is imperative, as only 55% of this state's population is currently within 60 minutes of a level 1, which resides in Seattle, or a level 2 trauma center, which is in Anchorage. These are our highest levels of care. The research and data provided by the trauma centers submitted to the Alaska Trauma Registry drives policy, guidelines, standards of care, and quality of care. Without this funding, the staff goes away to provide this vital need. All of the mental health, behavioral, and pediatric systems that have spoke today all utilize these data systems as well. Since the trauma care fund has been in place, the number of trauma centers has tripled in the state of Alaska. This is unprecedented, and this is a statistic we need to be proud of. Without continued financial assistance, the ability of these hospitals to seek designation or redesignate and to maintain those facilities are a huge financial commitment. Trauma education supports entire trauma teams, physicians, nurses, respiratory therapists, operating room staff, radiology, and ancillary staff. Training procured through the Trauma Care Fund extends way beyond hospitals. The pre-hospital providers benefit as well. For instance, I was an instructor at a level 4 trauma center in Seward last month who provided training to 3 EMS services in their community. They did this voluntarily. Two of those systems were volunteer EMS systems that otherwise would not be able to receive that education. This activism builds strong relationships, which equals better care.
Julie.
There's an advanced trauma nurse course in Juneau next month, organized by Bartlett Hospital, another level 4 trauma center. Again, this improves care and saves lives of critically injured trauma patients. They've partnered with Harborview to do this. This, again, builds that relationship. Participating hospitals and multiple partners statewide use data pertaining to hospitalizations of these most seriously injured patients to enhance trauma care patient support, monitor serious injury, prioritize injury prevention programs, and support trauma systems development.
Ms. LeBeau.
Without the support of the Trauma Care Fund, our rural hospitals lack the resources to collect and submit data to this critical information system.
Ms. Rebeau.
Lack the ability to respond to everyday and small mass casualty events indicates how they will respond in a major disaster. The systemized standard of care provided for and required by Alaska's trauma centers enhances this Alaska's disaster preparedness.
Julie.
And the Trauma Care Fund supports this. We will unnecessarily lose lives without this standard of readiness.
At ease, please.
I urge you. Into the emergency department. A qualified nurse by advanced training kept them alive until they could be transferred from a rural level 4 community to a higher center of care. Then I ask you to consider if the $2 million we are asking for to be continued, what's the cost of a life saved? Without this, Alaska's growing trauma system will fail to remain intact, expand, or strengthen, resulting in increased suffering, death, and disability due to injuries. I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Julie. For those that are still remaining in Anchorage, we do have quite a few on the list, and I failed to say that we have a 3-minute time limit. Julie, we appreciate your testimony, and the Senate has included trauma care funding. Senator Olson added that in, and we will certainly advocate in conference committee to continue that forward. We appreciate your testimony. Next on the list in Anchorage is Kristen Ramstad. Kristen, if you could limit your testimony to 3 minutes, it would be helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Kristen Ramstad, and I am the Parents as Teachers Director at RuralCAP. I want to thank you all for your ongoing commitment to early childhood education and specifically for funding the State of Alaska Parents as Teachers 3-year pilot. I applaud the legislature's support of parents and their important role in preparing children for school success. Parents as Teachers is a highly effective, evidence-based early childhood education and family support program that has produced positive outcomes in Alaska in both rural and urban communities. RuralCAP has received funding for PAT through DEED for the past 3 years. We currently provide 116 children and their families Parents as Teachers services in Anchorage, Ketchikan, Seward, Tanacross, and Tok. Our PAT program has a rigorous evaluation process that consists of both an internal and an external evaluation. The external evaluation is conducted by a third party. Results from both of these evaluations annually drive ongoing continuous improvement. I was disappointed earlier this week to learn that the Senate Subfinance Committee is recommending a decrement of $362,000 to the Parents as Teachers program, stating that they want to see more outcomes. Our outcomes show that 98% of PAT parents reported an improved parenting skills, including skills related to positive discipline in 2011. In 2012, it was 100%. For the last 2 years, all parents have reported they increased the activities in their home that promote literacy development in their children. In 2011, 97% of PAT parents reported that they better understood their role as primary educators of their children in their home. Last year, it was all of them. In 2011, 87% of Parents as Teachers children demonstrated age-appropriate skills that are indicators of school readiness. Last year, it was 96%. So please allow the State of Alaska Parents as Teachers grantees to continue this important and valuable work with families and young children. I encourage you to restore the $362,000 to Parents as Teachers as recommended in Governor Parnell's version of the operating budget. Thank you again for your unwavering commitment and action on behalf of families with young children in Alaska.
Kristen, thank you for your testimony. Jade McElroy. Jade, are you there?
Yes.
Welcome.
Good afternoon. My name is Jade McElroy, and I reside in Senate District L. I am a Head Start and Early Head Start Education Coordinator and have also had the opportunity to teach as a Head Start teacher and Early Head Start teacher in the past. I have witnessed the true value and benefits from quality early childhood programs. In my professional experience, I have had several opportunities to see firsthand the impact that quality early childhood programs such as Early Head Start, Parents as Teachers, and Head Start provides to young children and their families. The primary focus of each of these programs is to support the whole child, which includes their family, and helps parents to better understand early childhood development and their role as their child's first and most influential teacher. By working with families in this capacity, we are not only having a positive impact on a specific child and their family, but all of the children in the home, including future children and extended family. I have also had interactions with school districts and kindergarten teachers who can attest to the benefits that children gain through quality early childhood programs. Teachers have shared with me that those children who have been enrolled in programs such as Parents as Teachers, Early Head Start, and Head Start come better prepared for kindergarten. They have also shared that these children are more likely to excel in reading, which is an indicator of future school success. I have also heard a lot of feedback from parents around the differences they have observed in their own children who attended these early childhood programs and those who did not. Often, I have heard parents say, "I wish I had this program for my older children," as they witness the benefits from their younger children that they received during while attending. Without programs like these, many children will not have opportunities to adequately prepare for their academic challenges that they will face in the public school system. I am a strong supporter of quality early childhood programs such as Parents as Teachers, Early Head Start, and Head Start after seeing the positive impacts they have played in so many lives. Thank you for your time.
Jade, thank you for coming out today to testify. Senator Meyer, do you have any comments or questions, any statement for the record?
Well, Madam Chair, I just wanted to comment that that previous speaker, Jade, it was from Senate District L, which we know is the best district in the state.
I was wondering. Mr. Meyer, Senator Meyer will continue. Melissa Pickle, followed by Jonathan Teeters. Melissa, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Melissa Pickle. I live in Eagle River, and I have been a court-appointed special advocate, or CASA, for over 6 years. A CASA is a trained volunteer that advocates for children who are in state's protective custody. The children I have worked with have experienced neglect and or abuse and have had to be removed from their homes. Today, I want to speak on behalf of the Parents as Teachers program, or PAT. Research has shown that families and children enrolled in the PAT program experience many positive benefits, but I would like to focus on a few of the impacts this program has on parents, particularly on two related to child abuse and neglect. Parents in the PAT program have increased knowledge of child development and positive child-rearing practices and have fewer documented cases of child abuse and neglect. I want to repeat that last item. Parents who have received PAT services have fewer documented cases of child abuse and neglect. Alaska has one of the highest rates of child abuse and neglect, with nearly half of the reports of harm involving children birth to five. There are many reasons why children may come into custody. What I have observed in my own experience as a CASA is a lack of parenting knowledge around positive child rearing practices. I have encountered parents whose disciplinary practices are extremely inappropriate, but that they didn't know what else to do. I've seen parents who love their children but don't understand child development, and they have inappropriate expectations for what a young child is capable of doing. Parents who are so frustrated with toilet training a two-year-old that they become violent towards their own child. I've also seen parents whose children are injured because the parent has not appropriately child-proofed their home. These are all things that the Parents as Teachers program addresses in its work with children and their families. The PAT program works with parents to help them understand how children grow and develop. This helps parents to develop appropriate forms of discipline and to have age-appropriate, realistic expectations for their children. Furthermore, having someone to talk to about the stressors related to parenting can help alleviate the stress many parents experience. Parental stress is a known risk factor for child abuse. The PAT program can also connect families to other agencies that can provide additional information and support to the family. The program also provides basic information to parents on how to child-proof their home and how to keep their child safe. Abuse and neglect has a tremendous impact on a child's development, particularly for young children birth to five whose brains are still developing. Thanks to advances in technology, we can actually now see the difference in the structure of a brain of a child in a healthy, normal environment and that of a child who has experienced severe abuse or neglect. I'm a strong supporter of the PAT program. I've seen what it can do. The PAT program has many positive impacts on a child's school readiness abilities, social-emotional development, and more, but I believe the biggest impact the PAT program has is in providing parents with the information and skills so parents can keep their children healthy and safe. I urge you to put the money back in for the PAT program. Thank you.
Melissa, thank you for your testimony. Jonathan Teeters, followed by Sam Du Bois.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jonathan Teeters. I work as the Partnerships Manager for Best Beginnings here in Anchorage, and I work with communities around the state. I'm testifying this afternoon to request that the Senate Finance Committee restore full funding for Best Beginnings and Parents as Teachers up to the governor's proposed funding levels. Recently, we got some new numbers on the Imagination Library. It's a program that many of you are already familiar with. It's a critically important program for families across the state, especially in some of our smallest communities. Currently, Imagination Library is working with teams of local volunteers in 103 Alaskan communities and villages. And each month now, more than 20,000 books arrive in the mail for our children ages 0 to 5. That's a critically important program to make sure that books are present for young children and to ensure that they have a good head start when it comes to being ready when they arrive in kindergarten. Imagination Library is not my day job, though. I work with early childhood partnerships, 7 of them across the state in Anchorage, Fairbanks, Juneau, the Mat-Su, Homer, Ketchikan, and Wrangell. And I'm actually talking most days with communities who are eager to establish partnerships in their communities. As the legislature debates how to make wise investments in our state's future, I'd like to reiterate a number that you may have already heard, and that is that every dollar invested in early childhood can return up to $7 in positive impacts and avoided costs for our communities, and the state of Alaska. As a public-private partnership, our early childhood partnerships generate between 112 and 230% return on every public dollar that Best Beginnings uses to support these partners in the form of direct private contributions and in-kind contributions from the communities they serve. I urge the committee to continue to support the work of Best Beginnings at Governor Parnell's proposed funding levels. Our communities know how to make the most of every dollar to improve outcomes and strengthen our young children and families, and I contend that it's one of the wisest investments in our future that we can make as a state. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Jonathan. Sam Du Bois, followed by Jerry Jenkins. Sam, are you with
us? Madam Chairman and members of the committee, thank you for an opportunity to talk to you. My name is Sam Du Bois. I'm with the American Civil Liberties Union, but I'm not representing them in any official capacity. It's just daily I get an opportunity to talk with people in law enforcement and in the judicial system and also in the Department of Corrections. And I want to reiterate Judge Wanamaker's testimony that the wellness courts are incredibly effective, not only all across the United States, but especially here in Alaska, because we have so much more control over the environment that we can release these men into, and women as well, of course. So I, number one, want to thank the Senate for reinstating the funding for the therapeutic courts, and just reiterate that when someone is arrested, the state is picking up a tab for about $60,000 or $70,000. That's for involvement with the police department, with the judicial system, and with the Department of Corrections. This is not considering the cost of human suffering that's caused by criminal behavior, and by cleaning that up, and by especially letting them back into the community without any therapy. So I would say that if we can continue the program for $10,000 per participant, opposed to $60,000 or $70,000 per participant, it just doesn't make any sense not to increase this program. So I want to add my support and thanks to the Senate to continue this program and in the future, hopefully, expand it into additional communities. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for coming out to the LIO today. We appreciate your testimony. Mr. Jerry Jenkins, followed by Suzanne Fairbanks. Jerry, welcome.
Thank you, Senator Faircloth. I want to say thanks to you, Senator Bishop, and Senator Myers. And by the way, I'm from District N, which happens to be bordered by N and L, which are two good districts, but I take exception to some things Senator Myers said earlier, but that's okay. Thank you for taking my comments this afternoon, and I want to emphasize how thankful that I am as a member of the community and as a behavioral health provider for your support of community behavioral health. For the record, I'm the CEO of Anchorage Community Mental Health Services. We're a provider that currently serves ages 2 to 97, and that's years of age. And we're very concerned about the proposed decrements that had been proposed out of House Finance, and very thankful for you restoring that. And I ask your continued support as the Senate and the House goes to conference on the operation budgets. Individual Alaskans, their families, and the communities are depending on your support. As we enter this new era in Alaska based on potentially tighter budgets, I recognize the need for cost benefit. And we in the provider community recognize that you don't bang for your buck. And I heard some statistics earlier in therapeutic courts, the parents, the teachers. We've got to look at our investments, and those are good investments. The same thing in community mental health. And I'll use just a couple of quick examples because I know
time is short. We look at community tenure as being our gold standard, and that's people being in the community, not in jail, not in acute hospitalization or in institutional-based treatment. We have one program that I'll talk about, which is the Bridge Home, where we have had a 92% reduction in jail time. And give you an example, in 1 year, from 705 days to 58 days, that's a significant impact on people who have high utilization. So it's measuring those things and making sure that people are in the community and are being good citizens. I know from some previous involvements with Senator Bishop when he was with Labor, you know, we were looking at people going to work. That's our gold standard for our adults, emphasizing that they, as many as can and will, are able to go to work. If not, they're engaged in positive activities. For kids, it's for them to be in school. And for kids, for them to have a safe place to live. Matter of fact, that's for all of our folks, that they be in the community, they have a safe place to live, and then they be in age-appropriate activities. And again, I want to I can't express my thanks enough for you restoring and watching out for community behavioral health. And with that, we'll close and say thank you for your service and for supporting us.
Jerry, thank you for your testimony. I've been notified that Suzanne Fairbanks does not want to speak, so I'll move on to Jennifer. Jennifer, I think we may have your name spelled wrong. Otherwise, on my, I think it's different, but it's Snarood on mine, and I think I might know Jennifer, so I think the spelling might be wrong. Jennifer, are you there? And if you could identify yourself for the record.
Hi, Anna. It's Jennifer Snarood.
That's what I thought it should be. Thank you, Jennifer. thank you for joining us, and welcome.
Thanks. It's good to hear you. I am the Director of Community Relations for Anchorage Community Mental Health Services, and I just wanted to add my thanks to my boss, Jerry Jenkins, who just kind of spoke. As he said, last year, Anchorage Community Mental Health Services served 2,200 Anchorage residents, children and adults who experienced severe mental illness and who are under-resourced. By restoring the funding to the Department of Behavioral Health, you're ensuring that our most vulnerable citizens receive wraparound services that assist them in achieving recovery and also remove them from needing to rely so much on other first responders and service organizations that have a higher per incident cost. So please continue to support community mental health through the committee process, and I thank you again.
Thank you, Jennifer. Thank you for all you continue to do with our community. Next to testify is Ronald Wilson, followed by Craig Johnny. Ronald, are you with us?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Ronald Wilson. I'm a 40-year resident of Anchorage, Alaska, married, father of four, union electrician, journeyman electrician, and also a March 2010 therapeutic court graduate. In 2008, I found myself facing charges of misconduct involving a controlled substance, and at a time in my life where I was able to receive treatment through the program, my case was transferred over to a therapeutic court where I received treatment and had the ability to identify that what in essence I was doing was self-medicating the anxiety disorder. And I'd work hard, and after work would come home and to numb things would self-medicate. So upon being able to identify that, I'd be able to address these issues and have been successful. And having the opportunity to be rejoined with my family during the therapeutic court was extremely impacting, a positive ripple for my teenage children, and also allowed me to get gainful employment and be a positive contribution to the community taxpayer as well. And upon completion of the therapeutic court, I joined in on the Anchorage Alumni Group, and we presently as a group are recognized nationally by the National Association for Drug Court Professionals as being one of the strongest and most active alumni groups in the country. And our group is currently and consistently doing outreach programs and efforts with the community and the victims impact panels for adults, for first-time DUI offenders, for first-time or for the teenage monthly panels for minors consuming alcohol and other drug and substance offenses, We speak throughout the district at numerous schools, and we are involved with other peer-to-peer support agencies here and trying to get the message out and support other people that are trying to get their lives in order and break the cycles. On a personal level, I've allocated a portion of one of my properties for housing of ex-offenders so that to help bridge the gap for them to get housing as they seek out to get into treatment. And I work with prison reentry programs to help assist their participants with housing. Had I not had this opportunity, because of the presumptive sentencing guidelines, I would have been looking at probably at least 4 to 5 years, and would have still probably been incarcerated, not able to have that time with my family and do the giving back to the community. And it would have cost in excess more than the $60,000 that you heard mentioned before, but probably three times as much. So this program has definitely had been a positive impact on me, on my family, my parents, the community, and people that are also out there struggling and trying to get their lives in order. I really wholeheartedly would like to thank you for the reinstatement of the $680,000 to the therapeutic courts and ask for your continued support for other therapeutic courts and other communities that are trying to get them established as well. I thank you for your time and appreciate all you're doing. Thank you.
Ronald, thank you for sharing a very personal story and for your contributions to our community. Next, in Anchorage, Craig Johnny, followed by Kima Hamilton. Craig, are you there?
Yes, I am, and I wanted to thank you once again for all your participation in our therapeutic court. That right there was my brother Ron Wilson, and he and I both share in the IBEW as electricians. I actually am in the telephone communications division of the IBEW, and I too found myself in trouble. I had my first DUI in 1999 and ended up graduating the therapeutic court in May of 2011. I'm very, very thankful for this, and it's almost like a subconscious act that I did get my fourth DUI, and I was able to get into the court at that time. I had heard about it in my third DUI. I didn't know anything about it, and I cannot express how thankful I am for this to have happened. It caused me to come to a complete standstill, take a review of my life, go through the treatment that was put upon me, understanding the idea of, you know, accountability. You needed to kind of get your head right, and just by the name, therapeutic, lets us know that we had to get our head in the right spot. So I can't express my thanks. You know, it really helped me to get my life back. I've been a resident here in Anchorage for over 50 years, and I just went through what I call a depression session, and that time is over. I got back into my playing hockey and exercising and weight training, and I can't express the thanks that I have that I can encourage other people to do the same thing, and it allows us to form a bond with the alumni, which we're doing a great deal of participation in sharing each other's time on a monthly basis, doing a business meeting, and also on a monthly basis every other week we do a check-in where we get to know one another. We're having a work session to build a website. It's already up and running, but we need to kind of tweak it a little bit and put some dates in, but we're all getting to know one another better. And as Ron stated, and I'll reiterate, we're doing different things to reach out to the community. We're going to be talking at the Sheraton this coming first part of this next month, the 8th. We're going to be delegating to each other one of us at a time. Of course, going to be doing an hour or so at that session. We're putting together various meetings to where we can just do work parties and get things accomplished. And rather than I just keep going on about this, I just wanted to express my thanks, and I would like for you to continue to support us. And I think at this time, that's just about all I have to say. So I appreciate your time, and thank you.
Craig, we appreciate your personal story being shared publicly and your willingness to give back and support a program that benefited both you and your brother. Thank you. Kima Hamilton, followed by Doreen. Kima, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Welcome.
Yes. Thank you for your time and attention. This is my first time. I don't really have prepared statements. I'm just gonna just express my, I guess, interest in the $37,000 being being put back into the budget for the Best Beginnings program. Jonathan Teeters probably gave you the stats that would be necessary, and I think just coming from the standpoint of a father who recently benefits, I guess, who is currently benefiting from those programs, and seeing my kids, and those of you who have kids, I'm looking at them at 4 years old or 3 years old, but you're kind of projecting out when they're 40 and 50 years old, and I know that a lot of the confidence that I have in their ability to be able, to be contributing community members is directly connected to the support that they're receiving now in their formative years, and I just encourage you to take all of that into consideration, just kind of sitting here and listening to the other programs that are being taken into consideration. I think it's important to keep in mind that this would be a program, or I think supporting this program would certainly, in my opinion, be ahead of the curve as it relates to some of the other tough decisions that has to be made as it relates to finances and distributing budgets and resources. But I think this is paramount, in my opinion, because it's ahead of the curve. Thank you for your time and attention.
Kima, thank you for your testimony. I'm very familiar with Best Beginnings, as is the rest of the committee, so thank you for those comments. Doreen Skinkenberger, and if I've mispronounced that, please restate your name for the record and provide your testimony to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Senate Finance Committee. My name is Doreen Skinkenberger, and I'm speaking to you here today on behalf of the Anchorage Alumni Group and also a Therapeutic Court graduate from 2005. I'd like to express my heartfelt gratitude to you for restoring the $689,000 for Therapeutic Court funding and tell you that without Therapeutic Courts, I would not be here today. I would like to urge you to continue to fight for this funding and keep it in the budget. I entered Wellness Court in 2003 after multiple DUIs. I graduated in 2005, and I've been sober ever since. I come from three generations of alcohol-induced death and devastation to my family. Like many other Native Alaskan families, we've had so many suicides and early deaths from alcohol, we can't even count anymore. They continue today. I have generations of family members on welfare assistance, in jail, committing crimes, losing children. Our kids in my family are failing in school, dropping out, going on welfare, and eventually cycling into the life of addiction, jail, and ultimately death. After I got sober in Wellness Court, two of my other siblings got sober. We are the first ever to break the cycle of alcoholism in our family in three generations, maybe even more. After my last DUI, I was in jail, jobless, and at risk of losing my two children, all after losing their father in an airplane accident. After Wellness Court, slowly, over the last few years, I've regained my life. I'm a homeowner. I'm a business owner. I've got a wonderful career. I'm a taxpayer. My son is turning 19 and now attends UAA, where I graduated with my bachelor's degree and attended graduate school, all after getting sober. My daughter, who's 17, is in Austria on a Rotary Exchange program for a year, something we would have never dreamed of doing when I was drinking. She recently had to do a paper on a hero mentor in her life for one of her classes. I was overwhelmed and humbled when she chose me. And when I asked her why, she said, "Because, Mom, you're really doing it. I'm proud of you for staying sober." This is what our therapeutic courts are doing, healing families, keeping families together. In 2006, four of us Wellness Court graduates formed an alumni group. Today, 7 years later, three of us are still sober, and our alumni group is nationally recognized. We're going to the National NADCP Conference in July for the fourth time. We've been there twice as selected presenters for long-term sobriety. We travel throughout our state advocating for sobriety, wellness, courts, and treatment. We just returned from Dillingham, where we participated in a conference to develop reentry programs in the bush. We were in Juneau earlier this month supporting treatment programs and therapeutic courts. We go to court here every Friday and Monday supporting current court participants, people trying to get and stay sober. We had 21 Wellness Court alumni and participants at our monthly sobriety meeting last night, all talking about how we can give back to our community and others. Today, our Anchorage alumni group is a membership of more than 300 therapeutic court graduates from Anchorage's felony, municipal, and family wellness courts. In 2007, the Alaska Judicial Council conducted a statistical analysis for the number of participants who exited the program between 2003 and 2008. There were 229. The number of these people subsequently charged with alcohol-related traffic offenses 5 years later, 16. That's a 93% success rate, and it's because you're supporting this extremely important program. We want to thank you and urge you to please keep supporting the program. Thanks.
Doreen, thank you for sharing your story and for continuing to contribute to our community. With that, I'm still in Anchorage, and Senator Meyer, do you have any comments for us?
No, Senator Fairclough, it's snowing down here in Anchorage, or up here in Anchorage, and it looks like the sun's shining there in Juneau, so I should have stayed.
Senator Meyer, you are accurate. We do have other people to testify. I don't mean to distract from that, but just wanted to make sure if you had any comments. Rachel?
No comments. You're absolutely right. We still do have a few people left here in Anchorage.
Thank you. We'll continue. Rachel Gadicki? Rachel, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Your name for the record, and then please proceed. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Meyer and members of the committee. My name is Rachel Gadicki, and I am the lead advocate at Victims for Justice. And I've been with the organization for 3.5 years. Prior to that, I worked at Abused Women's Aid in Crisis. I came to VFJ with a degree in psychology from UAA and over 10 years experience working with families in crisis. Victims for Justice has been helping innocent victims of violent crime for over 25 years. Whether it's homicide, domestic violence, sexual assault, robbery, arson, burglary, and that list is by no means conclusive, we offer crisis intervention, making sure victims of crime have the choice to find a safe situation and get the help and support they deserve and they need. When we're sure their immediate needs are met, we can advise them of their rights as victims under the Alaska Constitution and let them know what resources are available to them, such as the Violent Crimes Compensation Board, the VINE Network, mental health resources, just to name a few. We also coordinate with law enforcement, prosecution, and court officials to keep victims informed of events in their case. We often accompany clients to the criminal justice proceedings at the courthouse so they'll feel safe in that environment, including when the offender is going to be present as well. We also attend proceedings on behalf of the victim if and when the victim is unable or unwilling to attend, so they will be informed of the progress of their case. We explain to clients the meaning and consequences of developments in the case so they will be able to make good decisions regarding their personal safety and emotional well-being, and we assist with the preparation of violent crimes, compensation applications, victim impact statements that are very important to be presented at court during bail hearings or sentencings after a trial. The staff at VFJ is very centered on helping people in what may be the worst time of their life. Advocates are trained and experienced in dealing with trauma and grief and provide a much-needed service for our community. We provide all of these services for victims of crime who are not the focus of other victim assistance agencies, as Donna White testified to earlier. We are the only victim service agency that addresses the underserved crime victims as our main mission. That would be largely homicide, surviving family members of homicide, victims of DUI, assault, arson, robbery, burglary, things like of that nature. It's our hope that the services we provide are recognized to be of vital importance to the health and well-being of Alaskans impacted by violent crime. Thank you for allowing me to tell you a little more about our work, and I hope you will be able to support our funding request. Thank you.
Thank you for your work, Rachel, and for coming out today to testify. Tammy Williamson, followed by Rosalie. Tammy, are you in Anchorage?
Yes, I am.
Welcome. Your name for the record, and then please proceed.
Tammy Williamson, and I am an employee of the Department of Labor and Workforce Development, working with the Youth Job Center. I also work very closely with Anchorage School District with their Health Career Academy. And I would like to advocate for the UAA Area Health Education Centers. They have had a budget reduction over for their centers from $250,000 to $100,000 per year, and this has been felt. Health is something that healthcare involves all of us in the state and impacts all of us. And as we know, this is going to be a growing need for our state. The interest has been growing among the young people about getting involved in healthcare. We know that the need is there for healthcare providers. Often the bottleneck is at education, training, clinical experiences. So these area health education centers are very important for helping to organize those clinical rotations that give people, students, the experience that they need as they are going through their program. They also help with the rotations that involve rural areas, which can often help with the recruitment of the much-needed healthcare providers into those rural areas. So continuing to support this AHEC system that's throughout our state, I believe, is very important for healthcare in Alaska. I also would like to advocate for the tech prep for what's next. The tech prep, high payoff, high school, college bridging. Something that we're all aware of is the high cost of what it takes to live in Alaska. And high school graduates, the ones that get their high school diploma, can usually expect to make around $10 to $12 an hour. A living wage in Anchorage is around $16 to $17 an hour. So when I go out and I talk to high school students, I tell them there's a gap. There's that gap between that high school diploma and then actually being able to support themselves. And so they need to have a career pathway. They need to have some training. And what Tech Prep has been doing is helping to bridge that by having those courses they can take during high school that give them that college credit, helping them to get on a career pathway. And I think that's very important because many students that I come into contact with, if they don't have those career and technical education classes, they just have no idea what they want to do. So it does help them to get an idea of what they're passionate about, what they enjoy, and how to get there and to start that process in their education. So I just encourage you to support and continue to support CTE efforts in our state. Thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you for testifying today, Tammy. Rosalie Nadeau. Rosalie, are you there? If you could place your name on the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Rosalie Nadeau. I am the CEO of Aquila. I'm here for a couple different purposes. One is to thank the committee for its decision to reinstate the cut into the budget for behavioral health. Let me address a couple of issues that came up as concerns in the House. One was the extreme increase in budget for that particular unit, and I think that probably comes from some new things that really have very little to do with what we typically think of as a behavioral health program. Those are generally mental health services and substance use. But the whole Bring the Kids Home initiative, which was very expensive, got added to that budget. And there are a couple other examples like that, that when taken as a whole, make it look as if there were tremendous increases, while in fact, most of our programs are funded in a fairly flat trajectory. The old program that those of you who've been around, like Senator Myers, around Anchorage for a long time, Aquila House is one of our programs. The specific budget for Aquila House was $682,000 and some odd in FY91. In FY13, it is $682,000. So a $1,000 increase, doesn't really do much over that span of time. The reason I know that FY92 budget is I kept it. It was the first year I worked for Aquila. And so I have that on my shelf as sort of my entry point. We now run programs from the Community Behavioral Health Center in Ketchikan to the prison program in Nome and Bethel and all points in between. We have a prevention program that is down on the chain. So we're one of the statewide programs that the state supports. If one looks at what each of these programs contribute to the state bottom line dollar, it's a quarter more. So the state gives us 75%, we add another 25%. And we don't get that 75 unless we can do that, unless we can match it. So it is a multiplier that grows the programs that the state funds in the behavioral health area. The litany of behavioral health woes, sexual assaults, the domestic violence, substance use, we lead that parade across the nation. I don't think that's a particularly good place for us to be. And therefore, I am really appreciative of the state Senate's efforts in this area. However, the other thing, and I don't know if it'll stay in the bill, but let me tell you why I'm concerned about it. The House did some look at what some of the other departments call indirect costs, and they said we want to cap indirect. If you look at Commerce and grants it gives with some cap on indirect, and then look at what they're given for. Frequently, those are advertising dollars to promote things in the state. They have some production costs. Behavioral health has a whole different setup. Because we're a health program, we must, by the state regulation, be accredited by one of three national organizations. My company has just recently gone through accreditation through the Joint Commission on the Accreditation of Healthcare Organizations, JACO. That cost us about $75,000. That's all overhead. We also have to have an electronic medical record system set up. Now, remember, I told you Nome to Ketchikan. For us, that is a tremendous enterprise. And that, too, we are hoping we can get that done for a little under $500,000. We're just about there, but that's about what it's going to cost us. I came from a meeting with my IT group, and I have five people working in that area. And we were looking at what we were going to have to do to beef up our infrastructure in that IT arena to meet the state mandated requirements.
Rosalie?
Those add to it. So please, as you look at this, again, thank you, but keep these kinds of regulations that we must all adhere to in mind as you proceed with this. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today at the Anchorage LIO.
By the way, one of our programs is in Senator McGuire's area. Before you guys redistrict, it was in Senator Meyer's area. So.
I'm sure that he knows that. Thank you, Rosalie. Next, just a quick reminder that we do have others waiting to speak. If you could try to get your comments right around 3 minutes, that would be helpful. Andre McLeod, followed by John Cruz. Andre, welcome.
Hi, can you hear me?
I can. Welcome. Your name for the record, and then if you'd proceed with your testimony.
My name is Andrea McLeod. I just have one question. Can I reserve my right to testify in front of the full committee?
Andre, the committee is here in meeting today, and we will meet again tomorrow. So if you'd like to come back then, we have four members here and some excused on state business. So the full committee is here.
Will they be there tomorrow? because Dominique just showed up. Bishop is there half the time. Kelly's in and out. So is there a guarantee there might be a full committee tomorrow or a full one?
Andrea, if you could proceed with your testimony, I would appreciate it. It will is being recorded, so all members have access to that.
I understand, but it's really frustrating. People are pouring their hearts out. There are many needs, it's really hard to, you know, images speak a thousand words, and you are the only one listening. I came down here, and I see there's Kevin, so thank goodness for that. On the way down, I guess Pete Kelly showed up, but there's got to be some respect here being shown for the public. At least have a full committee if you're going to meet and listen.
Andre, if you would like to proceed with your testimony, we're here to take it. Otherwise, there's others in line.
I do have testimony. I would like to come back tomorrow and testify, but geez. Somehow or other, there's got to be some respect shown. At least acknowledge that you heard my concern.
Andre, I appreciate you coming out, and I truly would like to accept your testimony today.
Can I do it tomorrow?
Certainly. With that, John Crew.
Can I do it tomorrow?
Andre, yes, you're welcome to come tomorrow. Mr. Cruz, are you there? John Crew? And for those listening...
Thank you for seeing me this afternoon. My name is John Cruz. I come to you today as chairman of the AvTech Technical Center Statewide Advisory Board. We're an industrial advisory board that assists AvTech in choosing the direction to go with its programs to train our youth and not-so-youthful folks in new skills. Excuse me. I'm talking to you today about the $200,000, unrestricted general fund, which has been cut from the AvTech budget. This money, and I come to you representing the board. This money is critical to the function of AvTech. AvTech, throughout the course of time, has worked very, very hard to control its costs, cut its costs, cost cutting through the improvements in building systems, heating and cooling systems, upgraded buildings that the state has been very generous with us over the years in allowing us to update many of our 40 and 50 year old buildings. As we go through this process and continue to try and turn out good candidates to go to work in the skilled trades fields, we are constantly coming up against the wall of a lack of adequate funding, adequate facilities. This $200,000 that the governor has put in his budget and has been removed from that budget will help fund a couple positions that are critical to getting everything ready. I'm sorry I'm not as prepared as I should have been. I've had meetings going all day long here today and just barely got out. A little bit about the AvTech Advisory Board is we're a group of volunteers, professional volunteers throughout industry. We volunteer our time to come and help AvTech director programs, choose what direction they should go, what kind of topics they should cover. Our efforts to do this are all done out of a personal choice to do this. There's no compensation for it. There's no waving flags or anything like that. Speaking as a father now, I have one child in AvTech now. I've had another one that has attended AvTech, and I feel very confident they're going to come out of this school with skills that are going to allow them to go out into the workplace and earn a livable wage. This is a wage that they're not having to share an apartment with four other people just so they can afford the rent. This is a skill they're going to come out with that's going to allow them to go to work, earn a living, be able to afford a car, afford a house, afford a snow machine, four-wheeler, whatever it is, all jobs that will contribute to the Alaska economy. I truly, truly urge and ask that you put this $200,000 back into the AvTech budget to allow us to continue with our mission to train Alaska's workers to be better workers and contribute to our state in an effective manner.
John, thank you for your testimony. We appreciate you taking your time. to come down to the Anchorage LIO and testify. I just would like to acknowledge on the record that Senator Hoffman is away from the Capitol on state business. Senator Meyer is away from the Capitol on state business and is in the Anchorage LIO taking testimony there. Senator Dunleavy has had committee responsibilities outside of the room, as well as Senator Kelly, and Senator Bishop is meeting with constituents that are coming and flying in from the his area. So people are moving in and out of the room, but all of the testimony is being recorded, and all of our members are respectful in watching tape versions or contacting people that are remaining in the room. So I just want the people of Alaska to know that we have a limited amount of time that we were here in Juneau, and we were trying to provide and be as open as possible to accept public testimony for as long as possible on the operating budget. With that, is there anyone here in Juneau that would like to testify on the operating budget or the mental health budget? Is there anyone off-net? Is there anyone remaining in the Anchorage LIO that wishes to provide testimony before the committee? With that, we did say that we would take testimony through 4 p.m., so we'll take an at-ease for about 5 minutes and then come back on to see if there's anyone else that arrives at the Anchorage LIO. We'll be back with you soon, Senator Meyer. With that, we're at ease. We're back on the record. It's a few minutes before 4 o'clock. If you're joining us from the Anchorage LIO, this is the Senate Finance Committee, and we have the operating budget at HB 65, as well as HB 66, the mental health budget, before the Senate Finance Committee. For those viewing at home via internet, the state capitol is still running, and committees are still moving. Senator Olson has been in the Judiciary Committee. And speaking with constituents now, Senator Hoffman is away from the committee room on state business. Senator Meyer is in the Anchorage LIO taking testimony. Who am I forgetting? Senator Bishop just needed to run down to the Resource Committee, of which he and I are both committee members. They began at 3:30, and he is assisting the chairman there to make sure that the folks that are testifying in that committee get the full committee. Senator Dunleavy is here. He just returned from the Judiciary Committee meeting with a topic of SJR 9. Have I gotten everybody's whereabouts properly notified? With that, we have three people joining us. We will check back with the Anchorage LIO in a few minutes to see if anyone has joined us. But the 4 o'clock hour, we're taking up Glenn Allen, Seward, and Homer. We have Louis Benicardino. Louis, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Louis, if you could limit your testimony to 3 minutes, identify yourself for the committee, and then proceed with your testimony. We appreciate you joining us today.
Yes, ma'am. I'm on the board of Avtec for years, and I've been here in Seward since 1975, and I was the chief of police, so you know I was involved with a lot of students and stuff over the years. But this facility has grown over the years, and it's one of the best that I've been had knowledge of or seen or been there. And I've been in this facility in and out for, like I say, years, and I've seen it grow. And it keeps growing every year. And now all of a sudden, we're getting pushed back. And I really don't want people to think that we're trying to get more than anybody else or anything like that. We got students that we're responsible for. We need to do a good job with them. And by doing so, we can do that if you would allow us to have what we need to do the job. Now, being short, training year by 5 days. Leave five positions vacant. Reduce all training programs budget by 5%. This is not a good thing. We should be increasing instead of decreasing. And I feel that we have to do that, and the whole community in Seward and the state, because we take care of people all over the state. And that's an important thing. And I think it's time that we work together and be able to do this and make everybody in this state glad that they went to Avtec. And I feel that I have never heard anyone say anything bad about the Avtec. And that's something really important, because you always hear somebody complain about something. And I enjoy being on the board, and like I say, I've been on it for years, and it's really, I think that it's time that we all work together, and that's what it takes to do a good job. And that's my thing, and I hope that you the group down there listens to what's being said, because it's very important.
Lewis, thank you for your testimony. With that, I'd like to check back with the Anchorage LIO. Senator Meyer, is there anyone remaining in the Anchorage LIO wishing to testify?
Senator Faircloth, yes, Ms. Andrea McLeod is here, and I'm trying to get her to testify today instead of tomorrow. So she's the only one that's left to testify.
And Senator Meyer, will the Anchorage LIO be open tomorrow? Today was the scheduled testimony, or will Ms. McLeod need to call in off-net?
Yeah, no, I'm saying through the window, their head shaking no, so I'm assuming the LIL won't be open tomorrow, so Ms. McLeod would have to just call in, unless you want to do it right now.
Well, all my information is at home. I've got all of these salaries and information. I would hate to make a mistake on any governor's office employee salaries, and so if I may do it tomorrow where the exact information is right in front of me. Thank you.
If Ms. McLeod, I'm not sure if you're going to testify for cuts or additions. That certainly is appropriate. If you could call in then to Senator Kelly's office to get an off-net number, we'll certainly welcome your testimony tomorrow.
Thank you. The people here were great. They already gave me the number. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Ms. McLeod. With that, I am going to turn the chair back over to Senator Kelly. There are two people remaining at the Seward LIO, and then we'll move on to Homer, I believe, is the next one.
That's correct. Christina Picata, is that how you pronounce your name in Seward?
Thank you, Senator Kathy Giesel and others of the Senate Finance Committee, for accepting our public testimony today. My name is Christina Picata, and I am a lifelong Alaskan and Seward resident. For the past 4 years, I have served as parents, as teacher, family home visitor. Currently, in Seward, there are 24 enrolled in the Seward TAP program, which equals 16 families, 23 children, and one expectant mother. I do two home visits a month per family and one group social a month with infant learning. Our purpose is to help families understand early childhood development and how the parents can assist their child in developing preschool readiness skills. In other words, I'm more or less a coach or assistant that comes alongside and cheers them on, because we believe that the parents are actually the best instructors, but they need encouragement and understanding. The areas of development that we focus on are language, our communication, intellectual abilities, and social, emotional, and physical development. I share with my family that whereas in the past, when we were in school, reading, writing, and arithmetic were the three R's of focus, but currently it's their relationship with their child, a routine, established daily schedule, and repetition. Typical lessons are introduced with music, art, handicraft, and books, which we give a lot of, but we mainly want to help a child thirst and learn and desire to explore and discover for learning, because we know that without that, there's generally no child that will flatline by third grade and want nothing to do with school. Seward is limited with our resources, only having one licensed private preschool. So it does limit, as that is a pay-per-child institution. The family structures that I work with and help today are single parents, traditional families, grandparents raising their grandchildren, children in foster care families. I have had parents that have been a resident in the Spring Creek Correctional Center and families who come to Seward because they are attending AFTA. And we'd love to see and work with their children from the rural areas. Without the state funding, I feel the families would be deeply affected and not receive the instruction and encouragement to help the generation of tomorrow receive and achieve their potential goals for a successful future. We appreciate your listening to my testimony, and I accept and believe that you'll do the right thing. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Picotta. Continuing in Seward, Willard Dunham. Go ahead, Mr. Dunham.
Hi, my name is Willard Dunham, and I'm a longtime resident. I've been involved with ABTEC for actually since its existence began back in 1969. ABTEC is in a major growth area, growth position now, and we've got new dorms being under construction. Some of the projects that you were dealing with, primarily the gas line, one of some of the testimony you've had is that a lack of people and qualified people to work on it, and hopefully you're going to pass that this year. But ABTEC, this is not the time to reduce what ABTEC produces. And there's been a $200,000 cut, which affected some of the receipts and usage of the receipts. The shortening of the training year and the five vacant positions that we had to do to make the request for it and the reducing of all training programs by 5% were not helpful to the growth period of ABTEC. So I would like to have you, and you, as you do your final review, I'd like to see you restore that $200,000 back and also see a way clear to assist them in growing and being able to meet the needs of Alaska and to provide the qualified workers for the project that you are going to put on the street and okay this year. So thank you for giving me this opportunity to talk to you. I would point out that ABTEC is very unusual and proud of the fact that between 90 and 95% of the students and graduates come out of here are placed in jobs around our state. So please consider this, and this is not the time to reduce ABTEC in a program that is as useful and needed in Alaska, the current Alaska needs. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Willard. We're going to skip to Homer for just a moment. There's a gentleman there that has made a request to speak, and he has got to leave. So we're going to go ahead and ask Mr. Wheat, Scott Wheat, I believe is your name, if you would go ahead and testify.
Yes, sir. Through the chair, thank you for your time today. I ask you to please hear me and see me as speaking as a fiscal conservative and a social libertarian. Former Senator John Torgerson and current Representative Mike Hawker are my political role models on financial responsibility.
State your name, Scott.
My name is Scott Wheat. Thank you for the record. I believe we save significant funds through prevention. I'm currently a customer of the Independent Living Centers on the peninsula here. In the past, I've been a customer of the Department of Corrections, emergency rooms, and once at API. I also later served 2 3-year terms on the API governing body. When you provide funds for Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority recommended programs, including living centers and other preventative social supports, the intent and the results are a saving financially and socially. Alaska leads too many lists of social disasters like suicide, violence, alcoholism, with serious financial consequences. So I'm asking you to continue your support of positive programs that result in savings in the long run. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wheat. We appreciate that. We're going to go back to Seward and Ron Long. Go ahead, Mr. Long.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ron Long, City of Seward. And I'm thinking now, you know, maybe I should have signed up not under the city's flag, but under my former flag as a tugboat captain. And an Aptec student, I went in a previous life through some certifications and licensing programs there with others from all around the state, and really came to value what that means to the industry. Just recently here we saw, and some of you may have even seen photographs of the drilling rig Noble Discoverer being lifted onto a semi-submersible heavy lift ship for its trip to Asia for a refit before coming back to the Chukchi and Beaufort Seas. That was welded down by basically a bunch of Aptec grads. And the welds were all x-rayed by Coast Guard and approved by American Bureau of Shipping. Yesterday at Aptec, a bunch of us gathered around a lunch table with representatives from tugboats, oil and gas support, vessel industries, Prince William Sound Regional Citizens Advisory Council, and others, to talk about how we might improve programs using existing infrastructure to incorporate some ICE training, some other modules within the Marine programs that will further our goals of pursuing ONG infrastructure and development in the coastal areas. And I think that, you know, provides a lot of great opportunity for the state and for the industry as we try to move forward with that. And it just hate to see those programs threatened by a cut, and I really urge you to restore that $200,000 so we can see more graduates doing more headline-worthy work. Thank you.
Thank you. We're going to go back to Homer at this point and start with Lolita Brock. Is that the correct pronunciation?
Hello, thank you. My name is Lolita Bracci, and I guess my theme is also the old adage, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. I'm concerned about a number of cuts, I'd like to thank you for putting money back into Best Beginnings, although it hasn't been fully funded to the amount that we had last year. And I'm also concerned about the Parents as Teacher program. I think the person who testified from Seward gave you a good description of the work that they do, and I would just like to piggyback on what she was saying, that when you give parents skills to take care of their children, and when you give them connections to other people in the community and to other resources, you are doing a lot towards preventing child neglect and abuse. You're preventing ACEs, that adverse childhood experiences that we know cause long-term problems. You are probably preventing children going into foster care. The prevention is just, it's huge. When we don't give families that kind of support, then we end up with children who have difficulties in school, parents who don't know how to advocate for their children in school, and then I see them at the other end of my day job where I work with folks who are trying to get their GED. I can tell you that the people in my GED program had dysfunctional families. Many of them had learning disabilities that nobody caught, nobody recognized. There was nobody advocating for them, nobody helping them stay in school. Their families didn't have those skills. I really encourage you to think about the importance of building strong families in Alaska. And that starts when the children are preschoolers, when they're infants. It starts with helping the parents, which is what Best Beginnings and Parents as Teachers do. We also know that Parents as Teachers, that by providing in-home visitors, that's really been researched as and proven to be one of the very, very most effective ways to prevent child neglect and abuse. And while I'm here, if I got a few more seconds, I see this all circling back to Aztec and adult education as well, in that kind of the importance of that training. If my GED students don't have an Aztec to go to, they're not going to have decent jobs. They're going to have stressful lives. Things are going to start falling apart. We're going to go back to families who need help. It's all a big circle, and we need the support in all those areas. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Bradshay. Rick Malley.
Thank you, Senator. My name is Rick Malley, and I live in Homer, and I work as an independent living advocate at the Kenai Peninsula Independent Living Center. I am also an Alaskan with a disability. I want to thank all the members of the Senate Finance Committee for supporting the governor's request for an increase in the independent living line item under HB 65. Independent living centers are consumer-directed, which means that elders and people with disabilities choose what assistance they need to stay in their homes and communities and out of long-term care facilities. Independent living staff work with them to assist them to reach this goal. When this goal is realized and they remain in their homes, the state saves hundreds of thousands of dollars in costs related to long-term care services. Our center alone has 11 staff that serve over 657 consumers, and our service area covers the entire Kenai Peninsula with outreach to Valdez, Cordova, Glen Allen, and Kodiak. With this funding, we can continue to serve these populations. In closing, I urge you to work with your colleagues on the conference committee to ensure that the funding remains intact. I want to thank you again for supporting Alaskan elders and people with disabilities. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Malley. Kim Burrows.
Thank you, Senator. My name is Kim Burrows, and I'm from Homer. I'm actually representing myself, but would like to say something about two of the organizations. First of all, I would like to thank the Senate for retaining the governor's $100,000 increment for independent living services in HB 65. Now I ask the Senate members of the conference committee, please continue fighting to retain this increment. Keeping the disabled and elderly in their communities saves the state of Alaska hundreds of thousands of dollars annually. Secondly, I also believe that no resources should be cut to Aztec because it serves the needs of Alaskans from all walks of life. I would also like to say that after the ridiculously poor attendance of the House Finance Committee on March 6th, a thank you is due to the Senate committee members who stayed to hear what we have to say. Thank you very much, and thank you for allowing me to speak.
Thank you, Ms. Burrows. Mr. Hal Smith, also in Homer.
Yeah, my name is Hal Smith, Harold C. Smith, to be formal. First of all, I also would like to thank the committee members for restoring money for the Alaska State Trauma Fund. As the medical director of the emergency department at South Peninsula Hospital, I'm very interested in the 2014 funding for the State Trauma Fund. I've been practicing emergency medicine in Alaska for over 30 years and have witnessed the evolution and improvement in trauma care during that time. Several years ago, South Peninsula Hospital here in Homer went through a very vigorous process to be designated as a Level 4 trauma facility. It took a year of preparation and many hours of work by our ER hospital and medical staff. It also required two thorough inspections at our facility and review of our policies. But thanks to that designation, we've been the recipients of funding that has allowed us to substantially improve our trauma preparedness and delivery of trauma care. Other hospitals in Alaska have also benefited from the funds due to this designation. The state of Alaska has historically been very supportive of improving medical and trauma care, and in the recent years, the Trauma Fund has been instrumental in standardizing such care around the state. Again, I'd like to thank the committee very much for restoring funding, and I certainly hope that you prevail in the during the conference process, as it would be extremely short-sighted to reduce or eliminate such funding at this time. And just as an aside, I totally support the comments about the restoring a mental health fund and Mr. Weed's comments. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Liz Downing.
Good afternoon. This is Liz Downing from Homer. And first, I'd like to thank the Senate for putting back funding for education-related items into the operating budget that were removed by House Finance. As some of you know, I'm involved in education from pre-K through the university. So starting at the top, I'd like to thank you for your support for funds that are reflected in the university budget. My role with Kenai Peninsula College is in education technology, and KPC has done a tremendous job in creating opportunities for high-demand jobs through distance education and technology. As a member of the Alaska Society for Technology and Education Board of Directors, I urge you to stand fast in supporting the Digital One-to-One Initiative. A piece of the technology initiative that was presented through the governor's budget includes not only the Digital One-to-One and the Alaska Learning Network, but also I think it's listed as homework tutoring. We, through the Title III program at KPC, have been piloting the tutor.com program for university students, and it has been a tremendous success. So the opportunity to have the tutor.com program, the Alaska Learning Network, and the Digital One-to-One is really critical for the success of our students. Alaska certainly has the ability and the resources and the talent to create the best education system in the country. The Alaska Association of School Boards has made some progress in this, in bringing to Alaska 21st century technology through the Digital One-to-One. I have a niece in Virginia who's a teacher, where they've had one-to-one for well over 10 years. I'd say it's probably closer to 15 at this point. Even her kindergarten class has had iPads for at least a year now. I'm also the mother of a Homer High School sophomore, and his friend through the Rotary Club is spending the year in Istanbul on a student exchange program. And at first I was saddened when he told me that there are no textbooks in his school. Turns out all of their work is done on iPads. The ability to access up-to-date information quickly in multimedia forms enhances learning far beyond the use of traditional textbooks and readily provides for adaptive and differentiated learning. I urge you to do what's best for all of our students from pre-K through the university, and recognize that investing heavily in education will pay dividends in the economy and the social wellness of our state immediately and in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Downing, for your testimony. We now have Joanna Giesler, also from Homer. Go ahead, Ms. Giesler.
Good afternoon, Senators. My name is Joanna Giesler, and I'm director of the Independent Living Center that serves the Kenai Peninsula, Kodiak Island, and Valdez, Cordova. First of all, I want to thank you all for the restoration of the $100,000 increment for independent living services statewide that the House saw fit to remove. I want to thank you for restoring that. And just so that we're clear about what services Centers for Independent Living do, because I know that there's been some confusion about that in the past. There are four independent living centers in the state of Alaska, and together we provide services to over 4,000 Alaskans with disabilities. We provide services to anybody of any age with any disability, and the primary goal is to assist people to stay within their homes and be as independent as possible. The Centers for Independent Living were given an increment last year of $200,000, but again, I want to make sure that it's clear that that is for statewide provision, and we would thank you for the $100,000 for this year, or FY14 as well. Our service area is quite large. We are able to provide adequate services to 32 communities on the Kenai Peninsula, but the 18 communities in Valdez, Cordova would benefit from this increment should you and the governor see fit. So once again, thank you, and good luck with the rest of your meeting.
Thank you, Ms. Geisler. I think that's all we have right now. We'll wait around for a few more minutes. I'm going to take an unease, and we'll wait around and see if anyone else shows up. And if not, we will adjourn until tomorrow. But at this point, we're going to just be at a brief at ease. Okay, we're back on the record for public testimony for HB 65 and HB 66, the operating budget and mental health budget. And we have heard testimony from around the state. And just for those who are online, we did receive a lot of written testimony, and that has been, Donnie, you say that's been put up on the website at this time. So just so you know, when you send that in, it doesn't just go off into the ether somewhere. It's archived, and we have access to it. At this point, I think I'm going to adjourn. We don't have anyone else at the LIOs and no one in the Capitol here. And we will adjourn tomorrow at 10 o'clock to resume public testimony. And it will be from Kodiak, Kenai,
Juno.
Yes. And we will look forward to hearing testimony tomorrow. Anything else to come for the committee? Hearing none, we're adjourned until tomorrow.